Warren Buffett stands as a towering figure in the investment world, not because he can predict market movements, but because he understands value. While investors frantically poured money into dot-com stocks in the late 1990s, Buffett quietly purchased massive amounts of bonds. When the inevitable crash came, he sat with billions in cash, ready to acquire undervalued assets at bargain prices. This approach has made him one of the wealthiest people on Earth. What's remarkable is that Buffett's strategy isn't based on complex formulas or insider knowledge. It's built on principles from just three books that shaped his entire investment philosophy. His approach has influenced countless investors, including celebrities like Will Smith and Ashton Kutcher, who credit Buffett's wisdom for their own financial success. The Oracle of Omaha's methods have become so influential that his annual shareholder letters are treated like sacred texts by investors worldwide, studied in business schools, and have collectively sold millions of copies when compiled into books. The foundation of intelligent investing begins with a crucial mindset shift. A stock isn't just a ticker symbol or a line on a chart, it's partial ownership in a real business. This concept comes alive through the story of 12-year-old Billy's lemonade stand. When offered $300 for his business, Billy initially thought he'd make a killing since his equipment was worth only $85. However, his father George introduced him to the concept of intrinsic value, the genuine worth of a profitable business beyond its physical assets. Through simple math, George showed Billy that continuing his business for 4 more years would earn him $2,100, far more than the $300 offer. This lesson introduced 4 fundamental investment terms: earnings, Billy's $600 summer profit; market price, the $300 offer; book value, the $85 equipment worth; and intrinsic value, the calculated $2,100 future worth. When neighborhood kids wanted to become partners in Billy's successful stand, he divided his business into 1,000 paper shares priced at $1 each, promising shareholders proportional earnings. The children eagerly bought in, demonstrating how people often purchase stocks because it's a great company, without properly valuing what they're buying, the hallmark of unsuccessful investing. Later, when some children sold their shares back to Billy at 70 cents per share while the dividend remained 60 cents, the yield dramatically increased to 85.7%. This illustrates a fundamental market principle. Price decreases cause dividend yields to increase when dividend rates remain constant. Understanding this relationship between price and yield is essential before moving to more advanced concepts. While stocks often capture the spotlight in investment discussions, bonds play an equally important role in building wealth. Bonds represent loans. When you purchase a bond, you're essentially becoming a lender. This fundamental relationship forms the backbone of the global debt markets, with governments, corporations, and municipalities all relying on bonds to fund their operations and growth. This concept was powerfully illustrated when Billy's father George demonstrated how a $100 bond works. The bondholder lends money to the issuer, receives interest payments, coupons, periodically, and gets the principal back at maturity. The beauty of bonds lies in their predictability. Unlike stocks, bonds offer a contractual obligation for regular income and return of principal. Using a paper bond paying 5% annually through semi-annual $2.50 coupon payments, George showed how after 1 year, the bond issuer would have paid $5 in interest on the borrowed $100. This example highlights the compound interest potential of bonds, especially when investors reinvest their coupon payments. The fundamental principle, purchasing a bond equals providing a loan, encourages investors to think like bank lenders when evaluating bonds, considering factors like creditworthiness, interest rate environment, and duration risk. The strategic value of bonds becomes particularly apparent during market bubbles and economic uncertainty. When stock markets show exuberance, purchasing bonds with good yields above 4 to 5% serves multiple purposes: providing steady income, preserving capital, and preparing investors for inevitable market corrections. During the 2008 financial crisis, for example, high-quality government bonds not only preserved wealth but appreciated significantly as interest rates plummeted. Later, these bonds can be sold at substantial premiums when interest rates drop during economic downturns, providing capital to purchase undervalued stocks. However, investors must exercise caution with several aspects of bond investing. Callable bonds, which the issuer can redeem before maturity, pose reinvestment risk, particularly in falling rate environments. Bond ratings from agencies like Moody's and S&P help assess credit risk, but investors should dig deeper into financial statements and economic conditions. Duration risk, how sensitive a bond's price is to interest rate changes, becomes crucial in rising rate environments. For those without sufficient capital for individual bonds, typically requiring $10,000 or more per bond, bond indexes and ETFs offer an accessible alternative with diversification benefits. While these vehicles won't show the same significant price changes with interest rate fluctuations as individual bonds held to maturity, they provide exposure to broad fixed income markets and professional management. Popular options include treasury bond funds for safety, corporate bond funds for higher yield, and municipal bond funds for tax-advantaged income. Market behavior is driven by two powerful emotions, fear and greed. This concept is brilliantly illustrated through the metaphor of fish in a lake. When Billy observes thousands of carp fighting at a pier for food, his father explains they want a free lunch. Fish instinctively follow others who find food, driven by greed. Billy astutely notes that he'd be in the middle of the lake where there's plenty of untouched food while everyone crowds the pier. This story perfectly captures how human investment behavior mirrors fish instincts. Like fish scattering when a rock hits water, though only one or two are threatened, investors often sell based on others' movements rather than understanding actual threats. Similarly, when Billy's neighborhood friends saw others investing in his lemonade stand, they rushed to join, only to sell out of fear later despite 30% gains. What's fascinating is how billionaires view market cycles oppositely from the public. They see recessions as the least risky times to buy stocks and most risky for bonds, while bull markets are best for bonds and worst for stocks. The key insight is that market price never equals intrinsic value, creating profit opportunities for those who can calculate true worth and ignore crowd psychology. During a severe recession, George demonstrated this counterintuitive strategy to Billy, explaining how he was selling bonds to buy cheap stocks. He had purchased 30-year bonds at $1,000 each 3 years earlier with 6% interest, and could now sell them at a premium of $1,432 because current bonds only offered 3.5%. While most people were fearfully selling stocks, George was calmly buying them at bargain prices. How should investors define success? Most market participants act irrationally, driven by fear and greed, while the market itself merely transfers wealth rather than producing it. The minimum performance standard for investments should be the risk-free rate of return, represented by the 10-year Treasury note, which was 2.125% at the time of writing. Any investment involving risk should logically return more than this risk-free rate. For truly successful investing, consider only investments that can return at least 1.75 times the risk-free rate. This approach recognizes that the first purpose of investing is protecting principal. So-called high-risk, high-gain investments aren't investments at all, but gambles that wise investors should avoid. Investors have an advantage over the market when they remain calm and logical rather than treating investing like gambling. While the market grows over time due to the businesses it represents, disciplined methods can substantially increase returns and protect against market crashes. The market itself doesn't produce anything, but serves as a medium for wealth exchange, similar to a poker table where money moves between players but isn't created. This perspective transforms investing from a daily emotional roller coaster into a methodical process of identifying value. Rather than obsessing over price movements, successful investors assess the best-priced assets whenever cash is available to invest. Since financial statements are only updated quarterly, there's little point worrying about day-to-day market fluctuations. Warren Buffett's approach to stock selection can be distilled into four essential rules that must all be satisfied before purchasing any stock. These aren't suggestions or guidelines, they're non-negotiable requirements. 1. Vigilant leadership. Companies must be managed by ethical, fiscally responsible leaders. While ethics can be difficult to assess, debt management provides concrete evidence of leadership quality. Examine the debt-to-equity ratio, preferably below 0.50, current ratio, must exceed 1.0, and bond ratings. Many excellent companies operate with zero debt, which helps them weather economic downturns better than leveraged competitors. 2. Long-term prospects. Select businesses you can hold forever, companies whose products or services will remain relevant decades from now. This approach also avoids capital gains taxes, which can significantly erode investment returns over time. When you sell stocks, you trigger capital gains tax, 25 to 30% for short-term gains and 15% for long-term gains. Charts comparing taxed versus untaxed investments demonstrate how dramatically taxes can impact long-term performance. 3. Stability and understandability. Choose companies with stable, predictable performance histories. Just as a student with consistent test scores allows for more accurate prediction of future performance, companies with stable histories enable meaningful intrinsic value calculations. Without stability, calculating intrinsic value becomes impossible. Many investors are drawn to volatile companies because they lack patience and hope for quick gains, but the only proven approach to stock market success is value-based investing. 4. Undervaluation. Always calculate intrinsic value before looking at market price to avoid being influenced by market sentiment. Intrinsic value represents what a business is genuinely worth based on its future cash flows discounted to present value. Using metrics like book value, equity growth rate, and dividend yield, investors can determine if a stock is trading below its intrinsic value. Valuing stocks requires understanding how to calculate intrinsic value, what a business is truly worth based on its future cash flows. Using Johnson & Johnson, J&J, as an example, we can see how this process works in practice. First, examine key metrics. J&J had a book value of $20.95 per share, average equity growth of 12.1% 2003 to 2012, and diluted EPS of $3.49. The company paid a $2.28 dividend, representing 65% of its EPS, a sustainable payout ratio. Companies paying dividends exceeding their EPS are essentially devouring themselves. A company's earnings can be distributed in three ways: completely through dividends, completely through book value growth, or through a combination of both. For J&J, we can conservatively estimate the dividend will remain at $2.28 annually for 10 years, totaling $22.80 by 2022. To calculate intrinsic value, discount these future cash flows using the 10-year federal note rate. Using this approach, J&J's intrinsic value was determined to be $76.20, which would yield a return equivalent to the 10-year federal note, 1.71%. Since J&J was trading at $65 per share, this represented a potential 3.59% annual return, better than the federal note, but still modest. It's important to understand that intrinsic value calculations aren't concrete, but serve as a relative guide. Benjamin Graham, Buffett's mentor, would likely avoid J&J despite its stability because it traded at more than 1.5 times book value, a threshold Graham rarely crossed. Even the best investment strategy fails without proper personal financial management. The author highlights striking statistics about professional athletes facing financial trouble despite high incomes, noting that 78% of NFL players face financial distress within 2 years of retirement, and 60% of NBA players go broke within 5 years of leaving the sport. These sobering examples emphasize that high income doesn't guarantee financial security. The common problem of lifestyle inflation, increasing spending as income rises, prevents many from building wealth despite substantial earnings. This phenomenon affects not just athletes, but also doctors, lawyers, and executives who often find themselves living paycheck to paycheck despite six-figure salaries. The key principle is buying assets that generate monthly income. The author recommends determining how much you can permanently save each month without affecting your lifestyle, suggesting a minimum target of 20% of net income. Investments should be viewed not as liquid cash, but as ownership stakes that generate income through dividends, interest, or rental payments. Even small dividend payments compound significantly over time. A $10,000 investment yielding 3% annually grows to over $24,000 in 30 years through reinvestment alone. Unlike athletes who deplete their 5-year well of earnings, disciplined investors create perpetual income streams through diversified income-generating assets like dividend stocks, bonds, and real estate. This personal finance approach parallels how successful companies operate. Examining cash flow statements reveals three essential components: operating activities, earning money through core business; investing activities, buying, selling assets and equipment; and financing activities, acquiring, paying debt, and dealing with shareholders. Companies with strong cash flow have flexibility to invest in growth opportunities, pay off debt strategically, and prepare for market downturns, just as individuals do with healthy personal finances. The author points to companies like Johnson & Johnson and Procter & Gamble as examples of firms that maintain dividend payments even during recessions due to strong cash flow management. Cash flow statements show actual money movement, unlike income statements, which use accrual accounting, where reported revenues may not have been collected. This distinction is crucial. Many seemingly profitable companies have failed due to poor cash management, just as high-earning individuals can face financial distress despite impressive salaries. Companies with solid, growing cash flows can capitalize on market opportunities and continue growing equity and dividends, just as financially healthy individuals can seize investment opportunities when they arise. The author emphasizes that personal financial success requires treating your finances like a well-run business, monitoring cash flows, maintaining emergency reserves, typically 6 to 12 months of expenses, and investing systematically in income-producing assets. While Warren Buffett famously declared his favorite holding period is forever, there are legitimate reasons to sell investments. The author provides a comprehensive mathematical framework for making these critical decisions, emphasizing the importance of rational analysis over emotional reactions. The selling decision can be illustrated through a detailed example. Consider an investor owning 1,000 shares of company XXX trading at $70 per share, which were originally purchased at $50 per share. A sale would trigger capital gains tax of $3,000, calculated at 15% of the $20,000 profit, leaving $67,000 in net proceeds. This amount could then be used to purchase 1,340 shares of a different company, TTT, at $50 per share. The key question becomes, which scenario creates more long-term value? To make this comparison meaningful, we must project values over a significant time frame, typically 10 years. Scenario A, hold XXX. With a 1% annual growth rate, XX shares would appreciate to $77.32 share, creating a total position value of $77,320. Scenario B, switch to TTT. With a 5.5% annual growth rate, TTT shares would reach $85.41 share, resulting in a total position value of $114,449. The mathematical difference of $37,129 strongly favors making the switch, even after accounting for taxes. However, this analysis must consider additional factors, such as dividend yields, company stability, and industry dynamics. The author emphasizes that this mathematical framework reveals only two valid reasons for selling an investment. 1. Fundamental changes. Significant leadership changes that alter company direction. Substantial increases in debt levels that create risk. Persistent decline in earnings or profit margins. Shift in business model away from core competencies. Deterioration of competitive advantages. 2. Mathematical superiority. When calculations definitively show higher returns in an alternative investment, the new opportunity must have a similar or lower risk profile. The advantage must be large enough to overcome transaction costs and taxes. The analysis should include a margin of safety to account for uncertainties. The framework emphasizes avoiding common selling mistakes, such as reacting to short-term market volatility, following crowd behavior or market sentiment, selling merely because a stock has increased significantly, making decisions based on general economic fears. This mathematical approach helps remove emotion from the selling decision and provides a structured way to evaluate opportunities, ensuring that portfolio changes are made for substantive reasons rather than speculative impulses. Investing in individual stocks can be difficult and time-consuming, requiring extensive research, monitoring, and emotional discipline, leading many investors to seek professional management through mutual funds. However, historical data consistently shows that approximately 70% of active mutual funds underperform their benchmark market indices over extended periods for three fundamental reasons. First, investors often demonstrate poor timing when allocating money to fund managers, typically investing heavily during market peaks and withdrawing during market crashes, precisely when opportunities for returns are most abundant. This pattern, driven by emotional reactions to market movements, forces fund managers to buy high and sell low, directly opposing successful investment principles. Second, mutual fund fees, typically ranging from 1 to 1.5% annually, have a devastating compounding effect on long-term returns. For perspective, a $10,000 annual investment over 30 years with a 1.5% fee would cost $60,617 in total fees, effectively consuming 20% of the initial investment. When combined with transaction costs and administrative expenses, these fees create a significant hurdle that fund managers must overcome just to match market returns. Third, fund managers face institutional pressure to constantly trade securities to justify their management fees and demonstrate activity to investors. This frequent trading not only increases costs, but prevents the natural growth of unrealized capital gains that benefit long-term buy-and-hold investors. Additionally, large funds often become too big to maintain nimble investment strategies, forcing them into larger, more liquid investments that may offer lower potential returns. Index funds present a compelling alternative investment vehicle, offering several distinct advantages. They typically charge minimal fees, often under 0.5%, automatically remove underperforming companies through index rebalancing, and provide broader diversification across entire market sectors or indices. This makes them particularly useful for entering depressed market sectors with minimal company-specific risk. Popular index funds like the S&P 500 ETFs provide exposure to America's largest companies while maintaining liquidity and transparency. Understanding market volume dynamics provides additional insight into price movements and investment opportunities. On any given day, only a small fraction of shareholders actually determine a stock's market price through active trading. Using General Electric as an illustrative example, while there are 10.5 billion outstanding shares, only about 44 million shares, 0.4%, change hands daily. This means that a tiny percentage of active traders establishes the current market price, while the vast majority of shares remain held by long-term investors. This dynamic helps explain why market prices often diverge significantly from intrinsic value, creating opportunities for patient investors who can wait for prices to align with fundamental value. This understanding of market mechanics reinforces the wisdom of maintaining a long-term perspective rather than reacting to short-term price movements. The author concludes by exploring Adam Smith, author of Warren Buffett's third favorite book, The Wealth of Nations. Born in Scotland in 1723, Smith is often considered the founder of capitalism, though this misrepresents his true focus on morality and humanity. As a moral philosopher at Glasgow University, Smith spent his career examining how societies could achieve both ethical behavior and economic prosperity. Smith's first book, The Theory of Moral Sentiments, explored how individuals form moral judgments by understanding themselves and others. He introduced the concept of the impartial spectator, an imagined third party that helps us evaluate the morality of our actions. His economic insights came from discovering that individual self-interest paradoxically benefits society at large, famously describing the invisible hand that guides markets. This wasn't a justification for pure selfishness, but rather an observation that properly channeled self-interest could serve the greater good. Smith observed that wealthy societies shared common elements: individual liberties, limited government, open markets, and swift judicial systems. He emphasized that markets function best when supported by strong institutions and ethical behavior. For example, he argued that monopolies and trade restrictions harm society by limiting competition and innovation. He believed that justice, not just efficiency, was essential for markets to serve human welfare. This moral dimension reminds us that investing isn't merely about accumulating wealth, but about participating in a system that, at its best, creates prosperity through ethical business practices. When making financial decisions, consider Smith's life thesis. Have you empathized with the lives of others before making decisions that credit your own self-interests? This applies to modern investing through considerations like sustainable business practices, employee treatment, and community impact. The ultimate goal isn't just material wealth, but creating value through businesses that serve others while providing sustainable returns. Smith would argue that truly successful businesses must balance profit-seeking with social responsibility. For instance, companies that maintain strong relationships with customers, treat employees fairly, and contribute positively to their communities often achieve better long-term results. The intelligent investor possesses three essential qualities: patience to wait for the right opportunities, knowledge to recognize value when others don't see it, and discipline to act according to principles rather than emotions. These qualities align with Smith's vision of the virtuous economic actor who combines self-interest with moral awareness. With these qualities and the wisdom of Buffett's favorite books, anyone can become a successful long-term investor who contributes to both personal and societal prosperity.